Farmer, what kind of cookie are you eating? You're showing me a sleeve. It's upside down. Maryland. Like the state?
They're known for their cookies.
Are they?
I assume. They must be, since that's the primary brand of cookie sold in this country.
I've never heard of that.
The Maryland cookie, yeah.
Yeah.
When I was a young kid, I used to think, what a place this Maryland must be, if only it were real.
Yeah. I will say Baltimore has a beautiful movable, it's called like the dynamic sculptures race, and they have them in the museum sometimes. Mm-hmm. And when I was down there, I saw a big cart shaped like a poodle that took up an entire hotel lobby named Fifi.
Delightful.
And I fell in love with it. Mm, yeah.
That's really nice. Yeah. No, yeah. I had it in my head in the same way that like other Europeans might be. In the same way that Marge Simpson is like, Long Island must be a beautiful place. You know, it's a mythical land where they make the iced teas, right? I had the same thing about Maryland, where I was like, well, I mean, it must be a land of milk and honey, right? Surely, because they make the cookies there. And I'm a treat based woman. I've never been shy about that. You know, as Orson Welles said, gluttony is not a secret vice, right? and so I just I've never been to Maryland. I'm excited to be disappointed because I have seen The Wire is the other thing. So
sure.
And not a lot of cookies on that show.
Yeah. You're eating a cookie. You're 7 years old. You turn on The Wire and you see the graffiti in the intro that says Bodymore Murderland. And you're like, what's that? What?
Yeah. It should be baking more.
Yeah. I'm a corpse locked in a house by a nail gun. And I'm eating this delicious cookie. No, Baltimore is nice and I like it.
Price of the cookie going up. The reason why Matty and I are vamping is because our co-mayor and friend of the show and host of the show, Riley Quinn, is listening.
Friend of the show.
is doing his own personal vice, which is listening to voice messages from strange women. So
that's right.
Obviously, we respect that here as well.
Yeah, as we respect all strange women here at No Gods, No Mayors. In other treat news, the rug has been pulled on me personally.
Yes,
which is that my wife was sent. She's a food writer. And she was sent by Target Percy Pigs, which are coming to America, or they're supposed to be.
I'm not a Percy Pig fan. I'll be honest. I think you're being cheated out of, for instance, some of the better anthropomorphic food items in the UK, such as like any of our caterpillar cakes.
Those are good. I've had a Colin Caterpillar before.
I prefer Colin to Percy. To be honest, this is such a fucking upper middle class thing to say. I prefer Colin to Percy, but I do prefer Colin to Percy. Okay. Percy is a fucking hack, right? But Percy went to the US on his fucking like gap year or whatever.
Well, the thing I tried the Percy Pigs and I fell in love with them deeply, and now the Donald Trump's tariffs are going to take Percy Pig away from me, possibly. Mm-hmm. And I'm sort of having like a sweet crisis, a sweeties crisis.
Donald Trump is a very sweeties-pilled president. Welcome back, Riley. Mm-hmm. I remember the thing, the Trump thing that instantly entered my lexicon. And you know when the Trump thing happens and it does just do that, do you? But the one that did that most profoundly was the profile where he's like, all right, bring me the poison. And they bring in like a big, you know, tub full of candy, of which he takes two fistfuls and then says, all right, get the poison out of here. That was very, very relatable to me.
The things like the Diet Coke button, which seemed... Like that is a real
Treatler.
He's Adam Treatler. Yeah. Riley, what's the treat situation in your location, if I'm allowed to disclose it?
Oh, horrible, probably.
Yeah. I'm actually just not gonna disclose my location due to various.
I think the thing to understand about you, Riley, is that you have 1 meter in your head. It's like the minutes to midnight clock of the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists, right? And that clock is like time until you need to go to Berlin and then go and like go to whatever the fuck they have in Berlin, right? Like the fucking respecting women onsen, right? Like you need to go there, and if you're not doing that, your mental health is bad. And I can tell.
Yes.
So soon you need to be in Berlin.
Yeah.
No, I can say I'm in Berlin now. I'm enjoying myself greatly. It's very relaxing. Mm-hmm. I'll be going to the onsen.
Where you all respect women.
See, this is the divide, you know, between, because like Britain, the only kind of onsen we can build is a Captain Tom onsen, whereas, you know, Berlin, they're doing all kinds of onsens. They're respecting women onsen, the Palestinians aren't human onsen. You can be like bathing.
Hey, this guy's wearing a keffiyeh in the sauna. This is against two laws here.
Yeah. One, the sauna is nude.
the law number two is the onsen's reason, the reason why the onsen has to exist.
Oh my god. That's beautiful.
All right. Let's talk about the mayors, shall we?
You want to talk about the mayors? Okay. Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the podcast, No Gods, No Mayors. I'm, I guess, your mayor for this episode, Maddie, and I'm joined, as ever, by my deputy mayors, Riley Quinn and November Kelly.
Hello.
Hey, girlies. What's popping? How's tricks?
Morgan.
What's popping is that the laundry machine's just started beeping, so I'm going to go turn it off.
I didn't say what's beeping. I said what's popping.
Well, what's popping is like circuits inside the laundry machine if he doesn't go and turn it off. So he has to go and turn it off.
That's a really good point.
I think the key thing is we leave all of this in. This is mostly a podcast discussing treats. I got a new kind of Pepsi today.
Please tell us about the Pepsi.
The new kind of Pepsi.
It looks orange.
It's not as pink. It's Pepsi strawberries and cream. And
how is that?
It's really good. Like, of all the... other people who aren't me, people who are weak of spirit, find it too sweet. But I personally think it's just right. So I'm a big fan.
Nothing can be too sweet,
exactly,
in my opinion.
Exactly.
Because I am a sour bitch.
Mm-hmm.
I am bitter and awful. Anyways, the first segment of today's show...
It's funny, I just did not jump in on that.
Did not. Yeah. The first segment of today's show is, of course, our old friend that I will name correctly. It is called Municipal Roundup.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. Welcome to the Mayoral Rodeo, as I like to call it.
So some kind of like City Hall Wild West show?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think to kick us off in the rodeo today, we've got sort of the... clown leaping into a barrel, which is Riley bringing us something he called in the chat, and I quote, whimsical.
This is whimsical. This is fun. It's current-ish. It's from March 2025.
Okay.
I'm going to take us all the way to the metropolitan city of Ulsan in Korea.
Interesting. We've never done a Korean mayor before.
No,
Now we will have done. It was lucky that this guy was in the news because he just popped up on the secondary order of mayors who are suitable for municipal roundups.
The minor arcana of the mayor taculus. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, correct. This is a This guy is a classic minor arcana. Mm.
People don't know that the mayors we've been doing do fit into the major arcana. You can work out how later.
Yeah, they're all the fool, it turns out.
Yeah.
Ulsan Mayor Kim Doo-kyum said at a briefing on the Ulsan wildfire, because there have been these wildfires in Korea recently, that the reason he was unable to get the forest fires extinguished was that there were too many female employees.
Korean misogyny. Okay, sure. Uh-huh.
So,
dude awoke.
While explaining the current status of the forest fire, Mayor Kim said, quote, "There are so many female employees these days that it is not that simple to put them into the mountain to fight the fire." This, of course, sparked a huge backlash. Immediately.
The nature of misogyny in South Korean society is legit crazy. I mean, it's crazy everywhere, but like, for sure. I do we know about how these fires started, by the way? Because I do.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so I was going to say,
believe
it's
a
like,
woman... did it somehow with her estrogen lit the fire in some way.
Basically what happened was kind of the plot of the movie A Serious Man, but Korean, because a guy was trying to tend the graves of his family, like of his parents, and in the course of trying to tend it, like tried to burn away some leaves that were hanging over it with his cigarette lighter and burned down, you know, like 80% of the city.
That's... bizarre.
I think this is a sign maybe that the family honor is not good. Like, that you are being frowned upon by someone, certainly. If not your dead parents, then, you know, maybe God?
D- Dead uncle?
Dead uncle. It's possible. This is possible that we could call this fire a kind of uncle's vengeance.
Yeah. Maybe you had a really shitty uncle and now he's extracting the uncle's price. Mm. But that's not the whimsical bit, the misogyny. The whimsical bit.
Perfect quote. Okay. Thank you. Yeah. Sorry.
I'm just going to real quick update the tenets of the podcast to include misogyny is not whimsical.
I think you could do whimsical misogyny. I think that's allowed in this onsen.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I will say lighting the forest on fire to honor your dead parents is something that like a Kang Song Ho character in a Bong Joon Ho film would do.
Yes. Yeah.
Like almost exactly more than yeah.
What I was like, oh, that's kind of weird. I wonder if this guy's done anything else strange. And then I found the whimsical thing, which was from May 2023, and I have checked this in a few sources. He had a plan to spend 25 billion won to create a Korean version of Mount Rushmore in Ulsan.
That's...
But with, like, business leaders. Like the founder of Hyundai.
So, like, you've got the guy from Samsung up on the side of a mountain?
Correct. But those
guys hate publicity, famously.
So, it's people with ties to Ulsan, such as Hyundai Group founder Chung Ju-young, SK Group Chairman Choi Jong-hyun, Lot Group Founder Shin Kyuk-ho are all being mentioned as possibilities for being carved into the mountain face. Ulsan Mayor Kim Doo-gyum said that local companies are turning their backs on Ulsan as they're being transferred to the second and third generation, and this is a measure needed to attract corporate investment, saying, quote, the regional aspect of Ulsan being the root has been completely excluded. Various measures are needed to prevent this.
Yeah, we need to worship these guys with a mountain.
Yeah, move your, it's like instead of tax breaks, it's like you move to your business to our city, we'll carve your face into the mountain, which by the way, did burn down.
Maybe it was a false flag. They were trying to like clear real estate on the mountain.
It's easier now. There's no trees.
Yeah.
Those are like beards you'd have to trim on the guys' faces. You don't have to do it anymore.
But the thing he and apparently he just keeps having these kinds of plans where he also wanted to build a building to contain the world's largest Bible.
Incredible. Perfect.
How big is the Bible?
And also to build a giant Buddha statue and also an opera house.
That's, you know what that's called? That's called multiculturalism, right? Like if you're Christian, you look at the big Bible, the extra, extra large print Bible. If you're Buddhist, you look at the big Buddha. If you're secular, if you're an atheist, if you're, you know, something not included in this, you go and listen to the opera. Fantastic.
Yeah. I think for ease of construction, they should just build the giant Buddha reading the giant Bible.
Mm.
You know, he's often sitting in the statues. So I think you just have him pop the Bible in his lap.
Inside the opera house.
Inside the opera house. But then where does the stage go?
Mm. Well, maybe it's the operas are just reading from the giant Bible.
They're standing on the Bible. It's the stage.
I think this can work. Every opera is a biblical story. It's like Branson, Missouri.
Yeah, that's really good.
The other thing is that he... Because a lot of like South Korean third tier football teams are citizen teams, so like the football team in Ulsan is called the Ulsan Citizen, and I was really hoping that it meant that like the team is like let's go citizens, but no, that's just like a type of football club.
Yeah, I think we have to get citizens jerseys.
Yes. Yeah. 100%.
And there's also again a lot of, let's say a lot of controversy that he's trying to use the citizen club to basically show, like he's trying to change all of the colors of the citizen club to like red to show respect to himself.
I will say the citizens Pope's matchup is like really contentious.
Yeah. It's a huge rivalry between the citizens and the Popes.
They call it the Ghibelline Derby.
Fuck.
Let's go Gilfs. Let's go Gilfs.
Lengthy sieges.
Yeah, let's see if we can get clapping in every episode from here on out.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, we start every episode with a clap, so I don't see why not.
That's true.
Yeah, that's right. Anyway, so yeah, that's my entry into the Mayoral Minor Arcana is the misogynistic South Korean mayor who just recently tried to build his own Mount Rushmore, a giant Bible, and then a giant Buddha in his town.
It's because women could never think of these things.
Yeah, yeah, a giant statue is a thing a woman could never even conceive of in her tiny brain.
No, certainly not.
Like you said it, Riley, and I was like, oh, what if a statue was really bad? I just hadn't thought about it. So
we finally found a way to affirm Riley's gender, and it is was able to think of a big statue, like conceptually.
Yeah. Someone said to me, think of a big statue, a big Bible, a big Buddha. Think of honoring the founder of Hyundai. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, easy for me.
I'm struggling. You've lost me. Like, it slides off my brain. It's like rotating the cubes, you know? Like, I don't.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is Riley taking the cis Kojiati.
Every time I think of the Kojiati, I think that's the name of like a beautiful Italian American woman, like the surname. Like Linda Kojiati or something.
Yeah, I was gonna say my hairdresser, Francesca Corgiati.
I'll say on this podcast what I said to November when we did the episode of Left Unread about the book Nevada by Imogen Binney. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I admit that assigning gender at birth is a pretty bad way to do it, but sometimes just by chance they do get it right.
Mm.
That doesn't sound right to me.
Investigating this very strongly.
Yeah, I'm gonna devote a lot of money into research on this. So that's where your Patreon dollars go, by the way. Mm-hmm. I have also thank you for the entry into the Minor Arcana, Riley, an old friend of the show. Perhaps you could say the godfather of the show, the father of the show. Mm. Our old friend Eric Adams. I've got some big news on him. A couple of items here. Mm. So we're recording this April 4th. So, this week, the Southern District of New York judge Dale Ho has dismissed Eric Adams' federal bribery case with prejudice.
You can't bring it again. He's off the hook.
You cannot they bring it again.
They did it, which means that he outflanked the Trump administration because they were in court going, no, we need the ability to, like, charge him again if he, like, defects back to woke.
Yes.
And now they have lost that ability, even though, you know, he's never going to go back. Not that he was.
Yeah, like Tom Homan can't be up his butt as promised.
No.
If he can't be reindicted on this stuff.
They would just have to find one of the many other things to indict him for.
Ho said in his decision, everything here smacks of a bargain. Dismissal of the indictment exchange for immigration policy concessions. Yeah, and like Ho, also crucially, formerly an ACLU lawyer, he was clearly trying to. It sounds so much like them rolling over on it, but it is maybe the court's trying to stand up to the DOJ a little bit.
Yeah, it sabotages the quid pro quo in that it takes away part of the quid, and now ostensibly Eric Adams does not have Tom Homan like up his butt or anywhere else on his person.
I mean, he still might just like. Not in a professional capacity.
Mm, yeah, like voluntarily he can, and because politically he's already aligned himself for this. He's running as an independent now.
Yeah, that was my second item.
Sorry, take that out.
November. It's okay. Mm. No, you can leave it. I respect you.
Oh, thank you.
We're in the respecting movement. So we have to come to this. We have to come to this as a from a place of respect. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I will say, yeah, Adams himself, after the charges were thrown out, he gave a little speech. And he called the charges baseless. I'm reading here from Hellgate. And he said they were fueled by lies. He invoked Jesus Christ. And he said, many of you know my faith. When all that came at me, Jesus stepped in and he uses who he uses, Adam said, holding a book in his right hand. But the book was not the Bible. It was Cash Patel's Government Gangsters.
Oh, my God. I mean... building a hall to house the largest printed copy of Cash Patel's Government Gangsters.
Yeah, for those who are not familiar with Cash Patel's Government Gangsters, you know he's Trump's FBI director. Cash is, and it's I'm reading again from Hellgate here, a sort of MAGA confession of faith, a celebration of Trump, a screed against the deep state, and a recasting of the criminal investigation that brought guilty pleas from such Trump world figures as Paul Manafort and Michael Flynn into a politically motivated hit job. Adams also said, and New Yorkers stop me all the time and trying to find the rationale behind this. And I found it in his book, Adams said, referring to why the government indicted him for allegedly taking bribes and campaign donations from agents of the Turkish government. I'm going to encourage every New Yorker to read it and understand how we can never allow this to happen to another innocent American. God bless you. As the mayor walked back up the steps to Gracie Mansion, reporters shouted questions at him. He said, I'm running for re-election, and you know what? I'm going to win.
Oh my God. I'm really liking the idea of Kash Patel's government gangsters being like quotations from Chairman Mao. Like if you're a big Adams head, you have to like prove your loyalty by carrying around a little like sort of like vinyl bound copy of government gangsters.
Yeah, I mean, I'm worried that like every summer the New York Public Library does like a read along thing where there's like a bunch of like, here's like the book club books for everyone in New York to read. Mm. And now I'm really concerned they're just going to replace it with one book.
Government gangsters.
We all have to read Government Gangsters.
Yeah. Well, look, I think it's very good that Eric Adams has the confidence, right? that he's going to take it over the line. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I think we can all agree if he doesn't win, then clearly there was cheating.
I think so. And to that point of him running, yeah, like November said, he also this week, I'm reading here from Politico, Eric Adams ditches Democratic Party, will run for re-election as an independent. He says he will run. He's going to mount an independent campaign that relies on, quote, a solid base of people outside of Manhattan.
Uh-huh.
With an emphasis on ethnic minorities.
All places he used to have hookups.
Yeah, basically.
Or maybe specifically Staten Island.
Mm. I think he means like specifically Staten Island and like the more racist parts of Brooklyn and Queens. He lamented how the bribery charges federal prosecutors hit him with in September, handcuffed him, and he promised to be, quote, uninhibited on the campaign trail.
Oh boy.
I have been this racehorse that has been held back, he added. This is so unnatural for me.
Oh God.
Eric Adams, you've really been keeping a restrained, cautious.
He's been an inhibited racehorse. And
yeah, the hobbles are off.
Now they're finally going to unhobble that racehorse. Meanwhile, Governor Cuomo sort of creeps his way towards trying to molest Gracie Mansion.
He goes, I'm in the race to the end. I'm not running on the Democratic line. It's just not realistic to turn my numbers around and run a good campaign from where we are right now. It hurts like hell.
Mm.
Yeah. And the other thing from this article is that he is, it seems because Politico, you know, whatever, you can trust them to just sort of like take whatever the politician says and tell you.
Yeah.
So it's clear that their strategy is they think they can beat Zoran if he wins the primary, who's, you know, the Democratic Socialist running for the position right now. I think that Cuomo would demolish this man, unfortunately. But if it's Cuomo versus Adams, you will never hear from me again because I'll be dead.
It's Alien versus Predator. Whoever wins, we lose.
Whoever wins, I lose specifically.
It is the uninhibited racehorse who loves cops versus the sleaziest man in the world who loves cops but also like molesting cops in the office. It really is like Andrew Cuomo is fucking Hamfist de Metafiore in like every sense.
from my comic Fuck City.
Yes, from your comic Fuck City. Yes. Because you were thinking about mayors long before we were doing this as a podcast.
Yeah, I was naming mayors Hamfist de Metafiore.
Like 60 years later, you have to fly out of Metafiore Airport, and you're like, for fuck's sake. Like,
honestly, probably drive over the Metafiore Bridge named for his dad, not him. So I just want to close our minutes.
The Metafiore Bridge is actually mostly a key. There's very little of it that's a bridge.
Yeah, it's mostly a causeway. I just want to close our municipal update here with a reading of a Nate Silver tweet from 2022.
Oh God.
It's probably foolish to think a New York City mayor will successfully translate into being a national political figure.
Yes.
But I still think Eric Adams would be my top five for who will the next Democratic presidential nominee after Joe Biden.
I mean, there's still time for him to be right.
I think he'd make an amazing leader of a controlled opposition in a managed democracy.
Like one of the eight like democratic parties in the like Chinese like National People's Congress. Eric Adams, you could be a big Eric Adams guy.
Eric Adams could be the coach of the Washington Generals.
Yeah.
He would be so good as American Zhirinovsky. I think he has the juice to do it.
Well, just getting on TV and saying that like President Vance should nuke Greenland.
Yeah, stuff like, because I think he could have fun with it, and he could add his own spin on it.
Mm.
he could make it all about like hustle and mindset.
That's true.
He could be, he could be Hustle Zhirinovsky of the American Liberal Democratic Party.
That's beautiful. So that's municipal update.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hi-ya. As they say. Hi-ya.
Yeah. And by the way, I should say, if you have tips for us, we're all relatively easy to reach, like in our homes or going about our daily business. So like, do reach out, because I've been eating half a pack of cookies in the course of recording this episode, and I have the Maryland cookies in front of me, and it says on the back of them, give us all your cookie feedback and suggestions. And that phrase has entered into my brain whole and uncorrupted. So if you have mayors, like, give us all your mayor feedback and suggestions.
Yeah. Municipal roundups specifically are nice to have. I got a really good one the other day on Blue Sky sent to us that was like an article in French that said a mayor had been harassed so badly by a crow that he killed himself. And I got really, really excited. But it turns out crow is an aphorism for like someone who's sending you threatening letters in French, which is less fun than a crow getting a mayor to kill himself.
It's not whimsical to be bullied into suicide, I regret to say.
Brief moment, you thought the plot of Edgar Allan Poe's The Raven actually happened to a French mayor.
Well, we don't know what happens to French mayors. We've never done one yet. It hasn't come up.
Yeah, we're gonna do our first French mayor when the order demands it, and it's gonna be like, oh yeah, he was bullied by a blue jay into killing himself. We'll be like, well, the Corvids.
No. Unfortunately, no. He was bullied by a Toronto Blue Jay, a baseball player.
John Olerud sent him letters demanding he kill himself.
The problem with doing a French
mayor
is that
a
like
switch hitter.
I'm gazing into the mentaculous right now, and it's telling me that the most probable first French mayor would be, at time of recording, Anne Hidalgo, mayor of Paris. But the problem is that's an episode where we just go, yeah, she seems nice. And then we talk about what treats I've been eating and drinking for the next 55 minutes.
Yeah, no, she seems all right. No firemen have thrown flaming trash barrels at her. Which is how you measure a French politician, how they're doing. How many firemen have assaulted her?
List of mayors of Paris.
Okay. So I want to get into our mayor for the episode, who is a trifle. But I wanted to have a little fun one after we did a very heavy guy last week on the bonus.
Yeah, it's like Sherlock Holmes said, you know, trifle is the most important thing. Like, loves a trifle.
And an incredible thing happened where a listener, Sophia, sent in a tip. Thank you, Sophia.
Thank you, Sophia, for printing out the episode transcripts and reading them.
Reading it. And then, and never listening to the show. But a Patreon, Sophia sent us a message with this one mayor, and it's kind of a miracle because I turned the page on the Mayortaculous and there he was. So great job.
Yeah.
Sophia, thank you so
much. Interpreting the kind of will of the like loom, you know?
Yeah. Great. Congratulations getting a hand on that loom.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about this guy, Carter Henry Harrison III. So he was born on a plantation in 1825 in Kentucky in a log cabin.
Uh-huh.
So the Harrison family is pretty famous. Like he's descended from Richard A. Harrison, one of the main regicides of Charles I back in England. He's also related to William Henry and Benjamin Harrison, who are both presidents. Though, of course, William Henry Harrison, the one who died after a month because he didn't wear a coat at his own inauguration.
Famously related to the president with one hit point.
Yeah, he was giving his speech at his inauguration. He was blinking red and everyone was very curious why that was happening. But they found his weak point, which was not wearing a jacket. So as befits such an impressive family, he goes off to Yale and he's a member of one of their dumb secret societies, the Scroll and Key. I grew up not far from New Haven and they have an insane building that looks like a mausoleum.
Yeah, they have a bunch of each of these secret societies has like a tomb, right? Like,
well, the Scroll and Key is like called the tomb because it's the one that looks the most like a tomb. Like, like the Skull and Bones building.
Oh wow!
Is also called the tomb. That's crazy. Why are they all called the tomb?
That's weirdly kind of like arabesque architecture as well.
It's like Moorish revival.
It's got the like oblock thing of like stripes of dark brick in between the light brick. It's very very weird. And so very cool to go to an elite university and go to the Moorish revival tomb where you sit in a coffin and get like jerked off on by your dad or like George Bush Senior or whoever.
Yeah, or a different president from the 1800s.
Yeah. So somebody's jerking off on you is the main thing. I think that's predictive, you know?
At that point, it's like, you know, Charles Yerkes just bursts in and says, call me Charles Jerkes the way I'm inducting all these freshmen.
I'm pulling all of this from the CIA movie, The Good Shepherd with Matt Damon, where he's in Skull and Bones and like his dad jerks off on him or something. I don't remember it very well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's known as the elite society of getting sucked off by a Rockefeller in a coffin. Oh man. Anyways, yeah, I grew up not far from New Haven, and like you drive around and you're just like, what is like a Arab mausoleum? Why is there a Kaaba in fucking New Haven? Mm-hmm. Anyways, he graduates Yale at the age of 26 in 1851, and he goes and studies the world like any upright sort of young rich guy of the time. He goes to Kentucky and he gets a law degree at Transylvania College.
Excuse me?
A lot of coffins in this guy's life, huh? Mm. Real vampire-y.
I know it just means across the woods, right? But like you
in Latin, yeah.
You can't be calling it that, surely.
Yeah. When was Dracula published? Mm-hmm. That's 1897. So I feel like we're still pre Dracula time.
So they had a good like 116 years of being called Transylvania University, and then Bram Stoker drops Dracula and they're like, fuck, we're not gonna change the name.
Yeah, they're not even called like the Draculas, which is what I would do. they are called the Pioneers, which is so boring.
Wait,
and
they're
bad.
Still going?
Oh, they still exist. I did find, and I do have to buy this. There are shirts that I guess it is referred to as transy by its students and faculty. And I found shirts that have a bat on them, and it says transy mom. And I do need someone to buy it for me very badly.
Yes.
If anyone needs to buy me a gift, I need the transy mom shirt or tank top delivered to my home, so I can wear it every day for the rest of my life.
So this guy
transy
went to
the bat.
So he went to transy.
He went to transy.
What did he study at transy?
Law.
Uh huh. Oh wow.
He's a sort of coffin lawyer.
It really does say transy, huh?
Uh huh. That's right. It does.
Also, can I just tell you this? The most important annual celebration at Transylvania University is Halloween.
I'm so glad they have that in writing.
Like they celebrate Halloween for like a full week.
Oh my god.
It's Halloween week.
It's Halloween week. So they say there's a week-long celebration of Halloween by Transylvania University students known as RAF Week in honor of 19th century botanist, inventor, and Transylvania professor Constantine Raffinesque.
University ends October. Professor Van Helsing?
The university ends October with a unique combination of activities, including a lottery for four students to win the chance to spend the night in Raffinesque's tomb.
What the fuck?
Yeah, where you have to stake him with a fucking wooden stake, or else Das Vampir rises from the grave to administer the university.
Yeah, why are vampires always trying to get to spend the night places?
I'm going to need Transylvania University to change the name of their thing from the Pioneers to the Vampires.
Yeah, or the Draculas.
Mm. The Chasers.
The Nosferatis.
just completely guilelessly saying, you know what I think really is going to convey the kind of ethos that we want to get across for like Transylvania sports is the Chasers.
Yeah, the Transy Chasers.
Yeah, the Transy Chasers, yeah.
Yeah, because you chase the ball. You chase success.
I would kill a person for Transy Chasers.
At least because
shirt.
I'm on their athletic wear shop right now. You can get like the kind of John Belushi just like college one that just says transy, and I will be getting that in a women's fit. But they also have the like usual like athletic department thing that says like property of transy pioneers. And I feel like a property of transy chasers would sell like hotcakes. So
Yeah, that's a really good way for me to get anonymous Venmos of $100. Yeah,
exactly.
To wear that
exactly.
Yeah,
what's their endowment? Yeah. And it could be a lot higher, I'll tell you that. Like,
you're asking what the endowment of this transy is?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, well, of the transy chasers, yeah. $190 million. They could double that with some like t-shirt
easy
moves.
Peasy. Anyways, so that's, we're past the part of the notes where I said holding some space here for everyone to talk about Dracula.
No, my God, you can search by sport here, and that you can just fully buy like six different designs of shirts that just say transy baseball. So if you want something to wear to a baseball game.
Oh no, this is really bad news for me because my softball season is about to start.
Oh, there's softball ones. You better believe.
Is there a transy softball shirt?
There are 1, 2, 3. There are 9 trans. No, wait, there's different pages. There's 3 sets and there's 27 different designs of transy softball shirts. I'm putting a link in the chat right now.
I will be wearing this to my gay softball league season this summer.
This is a financially ruinous thing that I've just done to you, and I'm so sorry. Yeah, but like,
it's okay. I did it to myself by finding it originally.
next time, so next time, this is a little peek behind the curtain. We're not recording next week. So the next time we record is going to be 2 weeks from now. You're both going to be festooned in Transylvania University it's athletic
true
gear.
It is true.
Yeah. That is true.
You're going to be wearing you're each going to be wearing hats. You're going to be wearing like pants, t-shirts, and sweaters for all different sports.
Yeah. I mean, dripped out.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm basically a multi-sport athlete. They should also have like fan gear, like a foam dome or a foam finger, or you can be like transy number one.
Okay. So it's 1855. Cast your minds back to the 19th century, please.
Oh yeah, I forgot. Oh yeah, what are we talking about?
Yeah, they barely even had like baseball camps back then.
Yeah, that's right. Our guy Carter Harrison III is 30 years old. He moves to Chicago after marrying his first wife, who is named Sophonisba Preston, which is a great sort of name. You don't get a lot of Sophonisbas a lot
double
anymore.
Double header of like things that used to be named very differently in the 19th century.
Yeah. On their honeymoon, he decides that he likes some land opportunity in Chicago, and because he inherits his family's plantation and 100 slaves, but he sells them all. He says that his time at Yale confirmed his aversion to slavery, though I guess not enough to not sell his.
Didn't do manumission, though.
Not do manumission, and also no. He sold his slaves off, which is a thing that people would do when they decided they didn't like slavery anymore.
I'm gonna be thinking sometimes about nothing else but the hats. If you go into activities and go lady mascot, you can get a shirt or a hat that says transy lady pioneers.
We're not going to get you off this the whole
time. I will also be doing that.
Oh no, November.
I'm sorry.
I really thought we were going to get distracted in a Dracula distraction in a direction, but we're somewhere far away.
I'm with the transy lady pioneers, which is like a thing that your confused grandparent would say to try and like, you know,
she's pioneering being a lady.
Yeah.
That's like your confused but well-meaning grandparent who wants to be supportive and is doing their best.
I bought a transy grandma sweatshirt. because I'm proud of my grandson, who's now my granddaughter.
Is there one that says proud transy grandma?
It has to be. If transy mom is there, they got to have transy grandma.
Transy water girl?
Yeah, you guys seen that?
Okay, that's getting way too specific.
I don't know what to tell you, that you can get it on a shirt. It will cost you like $30, but you can get it.
Whoever's doing the merch over there has noted the community's shift to water sports in the last 10 years. Okay.
That's uncle.
Is it made of vinyl?
Oh, my Lord.
Or is it an absorbent material?
This baby? You can get one that just says transy baby.
Oh, I love that book. Tori Peters. I got her new one the other day. I'm actually really excited.
Oh yeah, me too. I also got Stag Dance, but yeah, the like the easy reading version of Detransition Baby. This is called Transy Baby.
Transy Baby.
it's the new version of that book, Anti Racist Baby.
Well, because the thing is, this is also filled with like all the stuff that a university might have. So it goes down with like mascot. So like lady pioneers is just also filled. like different kind of sports, different alumni things, different family members, academics, which means you can get transy biology and transy basic skills department.
No. Okay.
You can. I'm sorry. Okay. I'm sorry to tell you, but like, God, there's so many. Yeah. I'm going to be looking at this for the whole rest of the thing. I will be.
Okay, we've been doing this for 42 minutes, and we've just started the daily, the early
Carter
life.
Carter Harrison moves to Chicago at a weird time. Chicago is like growing a lot, like
Transy College Republicans.
I swear to fucking God.
Okay, let's just say
I'm trying to not think about it as a blanket statement.
Okay, transy college Democrats would be even funnier. As a blanket statement, let's assume that Transylvania University has every funny combination of the word transy with something you expect an American college to also have.
That's most of them. Like,
let's assume it's all there.
Mm-hmm.
Maddie, please.
I have a booking at the sauna. A word from our sponsor, Trans University. Okay, this is going to be like the great lost episode of No Gods, No Mayors. Where like I couldn't even like talk about the mayor. It's fine. No, he was like, this is more of like a light mayor. So we're fine. He moves to Chicago. It's kind of like Chicago is growing massively. It is like, it is not like the machine politics that we're used to hearing about Chicago. Not quite yet, but it is sort of his son, Carter Harrison IV, wrote in his book that the Chicago of the time was, quote, a happy-go-lucky community, a wild and woolly frontier town with very lax attitudes towards corruption.
Woolly.
So it's the mid-19th century. So a rich guy like Carter Harrison, he just sort of becomes a millionaire in real estate. He starts practicing as a lawyer.
Just like falls into it, you know?
Yeah, he just trips and falls into owning a huge chunk of the west side of Kentucky, which is, or the west side of Chicago, which is all, there's a weirdly a ton of displaced Kentuckians there.
But just back in the day, he was a member of the Kentucky diaspora.
Basically. I live in Little Kentucky.
The food, incredible.
Oh my God, I got a hot brown in Little Kentucky. Oh, it's just like when you go to Kentucky.
Okay, yeah, no. I love to go to whatever the Little Kentucky equivalent of, like, I don't know, like San Gennaro is, you know, buy like an $80 Kentucky t-shirt.
I'm going to the Little Derby.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm getting a mint
tiny lip. Horses.
So right after the Great Fire of 1871, which we all know about, which was set by a cow trying to pay tribute to its ancestors. Harrison gets involved municipally. He starts like he gets on a unity ticket with some Republicans that they call the fireproof ticket.
Just after that's so funny to be like the year after 9/11 to be running as the 9/11 will never happen again candidate.
Yeah. I mean, basically, it's like, what's like the main thing people care about? It's like, well, everyone's house is just burned down. And it's like, well, we're the fireproof ticket. This politics used to be so easy.
We will eliminate all house.
You're voting for the cow genocide.
I mean, in many ways, every vote you make does that.
Yeah, I will say Chicago, big cow genocide kind of town. Mm. So he and the fireproof ticket do really well. He ends up on the Cook County Board of Commissioners. The mayor from that ticket, Joseph Medill, ends up the mayor. He's a Republican. He was weirdly a staunch abolitionist and supporter of Lincoln. Like his paper was, he owned the Trib, which was the Republican paper, but he also constantly wrote about how the Irish were lazy in op-eds.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's classic 19th century Republican position is like, I'm against slavery. Also, you know, we should build a wall around Ireland.
Yeah, they're shiftless and ruining our country. So he, at this point, the mayor is a 2-year term. And he beefs up the office like a concerning amount and then was so stressed out by it that he abandoned his post with 3 months to go and went to Europe on a convalescent tour and doesn't run again.
That I get.
The kind of Celestine V version of being a mayor.
He got burnt out and then he was like, you know what? I just need to go to there. Apparently in Brandenburg, there's like a coaching inn that plays really good, like
oh my
jigs.
God.
I'm going to the man respecting onsen in Berlin.
Crucially, not the Irish respecting onsen.
No, that's the different one.
Hey, he's wearing an Irish Free State shirt in the sauna. This is disobeying two laws.
Oh man. Harrison, just a year into his board tenure, he runs for Congress, but he gets beat really soundly because the district is very heavily Republican, but he outperforms the sort of like standard Democrat performance in those elections. And he runs again after his term and he wins by 8 votes. The Tribune, his publisher, is the mayor, blames the unity ticket for this, which aligned some of the Republicans with less popular Democrats' stance on the beer question, which was the implementation of blue laws. So this peeled off votes that would normally go to the Republicans, to the People's Party, which was anti-blue law, which is, I see someone highlighting the word blue law. And for non-Americans, that's when you can't, that's like when you make a county dry, you can't buy beer on Sundays, or where I grew up in Connecticut. On Sundays, they put a big tarp over the beer in the store. So it was like, you can't see it.
Top day.
We're all going to pretend the beer's not there.
Basically. And this is a big thing over, you're like waspier places had this, like New England. And then I guess some of the upper Midwest was looking at it in the 1800s. So Harris is also in Europe when he gets elected, but he comes home. He takes office. He serves a couple of terms in Congress.
Just getting a sort of message by the pool in Italy where you're on vacation to be like, hey, you've been elected mayor of Chicago.
Well, he gets elected to Congress.
Oh, sorry. Shit. Sorry. Mm-hmm. My bad.
Yes. Oh, it's okay. He comes home. He takes office. He serves a couple of terms. Yeah. He gets elected for a second term while he's traveling in Europe again. But this time it's because his wife died.
They couldn't make you be in the office. They couldn't even make you be in the country. Like, people talk about work from home now. This guy was work from Europe.
Yeah. At a time when he would have been like a telegraph nomad.
Yeah, you actually just need like a telegraph key. Throw that in a backpack, you can hook it up to the nearest like telegraph wire.
Yeah. I was reading some article about how everyone in Mexico City was getting really mad at all the American telegraph nomads. Yeah. Gentrifying the joint. So yeah, but he's in Europe because his wife died and he's on a My Wife is Dead tour.
Does he, anytime something bad happens to Carter Harrison III, he's just like, all right, you forced my hand back to Europe with me for a while.
Are we 100% sure that this isn't Dickie Greenleaf, displaced to the 19th century?
Possibly. So he serves his second term, but has a very confusing scandal that I read about for like 3 hours and couldn't really get to the bottom of. He like pushed through the payment of some disability benefits to self-proclaimed Union Army veterans, and it turns out none of them actually served or suffered any injuries. It was just four guys, and this basically forces him out of office.
That rules. It must have been his buddies
or something. It's underreported.
Stealing valor on like a transactional basis, the rarer, but I think funnier kind of valor stealing to get that sweet VA healthcare.
Yeah. So he gets forced out of office in Congress, basically. And like so many scandal-plagued local men, he runs for office for mayor. He gets the Democratic nomination and beats an anti-gambling Republican.
The least fun man in the planet.
Mm. Yeah. And apparently during the campaign, Harrison would often ride around town in a horse-drawn wagon with an eagle that he had taken as a pet. Voters began to call him the Eagle, which is confusing to me because he had an eagle. That's just a note from me. From the future.
Yeah, he's the Eagle's keeper or friend, depending on how you interpret their relationship.
The friend.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. This is cool though, that politics could be like there is this Kentuckian riding around with an eagle.
Yeah, I'm gonna call him the Eagle. Mm. He's the mayor now. The Chicago Tribune found that repeat voters had been transported across the city by Democrats in order to cast multiple votes. But to me, that seems like a thing that everyone was doing, or you just sort of accused everyone of doing at the time.
Mm. That's just like
you could never win an election if you weren't doing like shenanigans with like shaving people stuff.
This guy gets like, he's voted 7 times, but that's fine because he's also 6 Union Army veterans.
Hey, he's got 12 missing limbs. Show some respect.
This guy died 19 times at the Battle of Antietam, and you're going to tell him he can't vote again?
Yeah, because he's Irish. It was voter fraud was sort of in the air. The previous year's presidential election in America was such a nightmare that it led to the creation of laws for better counting of votes, which did, if you recall, fix that forever in America.
Yeah, you had to stop counting on your fingers because there were a lot of guys who had like more or fewer. Yeah,
that was like their version of voter ID. It's like, this is going to stop people voting 19 times. And this is a proud tradition of this country.
Yeah, nobody can have a mustache. So Harrison basically is a very charismatic guy. Chicago is undergoing this like massive explosion of growth. And everyone loves him except for the white evangelical middle class. He loves to brag about Chicago, and he calls the city his bride.
That's a Cuomo thing. He's going to fuck...
Does Cuomo call New York his wife?
Well, I feel like he must do, right? Because, like, he's going to fuck it. Like, I have a strong kind of aversion to this in the sense of, like, he's gonna fuck the city.
Yeah. His big thing is he fights the railroads who are, like, snatching up all sorts of land and displacing people. He advocates for elevated tracks so people are not killed by the trains constantly.
Oh, so it's a straight line from this guy going to Transylvania University to the Blues Brothers joke about how often does the train go past the window.
In 1884, Harrison allegedly, I'm asking the 200-year-old man to not sue us, orders the Chicago PD to pull men sympathetic to Grover Cleveland off the street and pack the hall where the Democratic Convention is being held. Because politics used to be cool and we used to be a real country.
Grover Cleveland had shooters. Like he had like the cops on his side.
Yeah, because he had Carter Harrison III on his side.
That's so funny that like your job as a cop in, you know, 19th century Chicago was partially dependent on how you felt about Grover Cleveland.
Well, also, yeah. I like that it's like they knew who was sympathetic to Grover Cleveland. And instead of being like, you're getting black bagged for Grover Cleveland, it was like, come on, I'm helping you go support Grover Cleveland.
In 1884, he runs for governor of Illinois and does not succeed. And then 1886 is the Haymarket riots, which he is mayor during. He is, however, and this is cool to me, quick to speak out against anti-socialist language in the news. And he asserts that socialists represent, and I quote, workers, thinkers, and writers of the United States.
You have to do it in a Kentucky accent, otherwise it doesn't count. It's like,
sorry, I'm not going to do that. can't make me.
This is real like Everard Clare shit to me as well. Like he is a lavish motherfucker. It would appear to me.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
he. But it's all for the benefit of the workers. You know, this guy and his eagle, they're on our side, kind of maybe.
Yeah, and because of the riots breaking out though. And mounting accusations of voter fraud. And also the Christians in the city, like the evangelicals that don't like him, seem to think that the riots were the result of him allowing saloons to be open on Sunday.
These men drank so much that they became communists.
That one communist threw a bomb. Yeah. Mm. So his popularity is declining and he sees the writing on the wall. He steps down after his fourth two-year term in 1887. He decides to retire, but the Democrats can't find anyone to replace him. So they nominate him.
I think a lot about this. A 2-year term. They had to do all this shit every 2 years. You had to pretend to have been in the Civil War every 2 years.
Yeah, you could. You have 2 years to grow your election beard.
Oh my god. He gets nominated again, despite him not wanting it. However, his second wife dies, and he's like, well. Time to go to Europe. Goodbye.
This is one of the most dead wife-pilled men. He's having like multiple different John Wick dead wife reminiscence moments at the same time.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, he has just decided that like Europe is his comfort continent.
Honestly, that's so real. He's so real for that. And like, if you can do that, if you have the means to be like, I'm sad. I'm going to go to, I don't know, Rome or whatever. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, what would cheer me up about my dead wife is this beautiful European food.
Yeah. I would love some fried artichokes in the Jewish quarter of Rome.
Oh, what if he went like Northern Europe though? Cause we've just been saying Europe. What if he's like, my wife is dead. The only thing that can comfort me is some horrid meatballs.
I was going to say my wife is dead, but it's herring season. So,
oh God!
I will say, I had when I was in the Netherlands about 10 years ago. I had the street herring in the bun, and it was quite good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
It's salty. It's like fish.
Honestly,
it's, yeah, sure.
Yeah, it is like fish. Yeah.
If I'm sad, that's where I go. I go to Northern Europe.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah, Riley goes to the woman respecting spa.
Yeah.
In Northern Europe. Mm-hmm. So he basically steps out of political life. He publishes a book. He travels a bunch. He becomes the owner and the editor of the Chicago Times.
This guy feels like he's having the most fun being alive of any of the mayors we've done, maybe.
Yeah.
No, with the dead wife stuff, but you know.
Yeah. He recalls his son, Carter Harrison IV, who was getting educated in Germany to come back and help run the paper, who is the only newspaper to support the Pullman strikers in the mid-1890s later. And he himself became the mayor also five times with one non-consecutive, but nothing interesting happened to him at all.
Just it's the family business, and the family business is mayoralty. Mm-hmm.
Is being mayor exactly five times one non-consecutive. Yeah. Yeah.
The family business is conducting police roundups, helpful police roundups of your own supporters, and then also like sort of beard timing.
Yeah. In 1891, Carter Harrison feels the pull municipally.
The dad.
Yeah. Carter Harrison III, our subject. He decides to run for mayor again in 1891.
Wait, so has his son been mayor at this point?
No, like his son is mayor later.
Okay, gotcha, gotcha.
So in 1891, he decides to run for mayor again. He doesn't get the Democratic nomination, so he runs as an independent and is definitely a spoiler
holding up a copy of Emma Goldman's book being like, yeah. I'm going to rely on this. Every Chicagoan should read it.
Yeah, a Republican wins by only a few hundred votes.
Sorry, Maddie, yeah. can we say the name of the Republican that wins?
Oh, yeah, I'll get there.
Okay, there we go. Right. Sorry.
I'm a big fan of the Democrat's name as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The Republican wins by a couple hundred votes because Harrison here is definitely a spoiler. And so, of course, the incumbent Democrat, DeWitt Clinton Krieger, loses to the Republican, Hempstead Washburn.
Oh, we used to have names.
Yeah.
Only the Mormons are doing it like this now. Mm. And they're not even doing stuff like Hempstead Washburn.
No, because like a Mormon might do the Krieger, but that's like a first name. Like, you're not getting a DeWitt.
DeWitt is a very Mormon first name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like Hempstead Washburn is the name of like a baseball player from 1912 that pitched the only 47 inning game, you know.
Hempstead Washburn is either a like baseball player or like basketball player that is like whose name is last spoken by the dad at the YMCA as he's doing three pointers. Hempstead Washburn.
Singing a flat-footed three over me. Yeah.
You do an underhanded three. Flat-footed, underhanded Washburn.
It's weirdly unblockable.
Everyone else on the court has to go home and look him up, but he's only got like a Wikipedia stub with no picture.
DeWitt Clinton Krieger was the guy who oversaw the development of the famous 1893 World Columbian Exposition, which, you know, you've read Devil in the White City.
Oh, of course.
You know, yeah. But the Columbian Exposition.
Yeah, sure.
So in 1893, our boy Carter Harrison III mounts yet another mayoral bid. He doesn't have any institutional support. And him and Grover Cleveland have fallen out over Cleveland's stance on the gold standard versus the silver and gold standard.
Bimetallism.
Because politics are stupid.
Yes. Yeah. Bimetallism versus like unimetallism. This is so cool though, that if he's running for mayor, you can be like, oh, you know, I think my dad remembers him. And then the dad is like, yeah, he used to like ride around with an eagle. And you're like, okay, yeah, sure. Right.
Uh-huh. The eagle. Sure.
Yeah. He was the eagle. He used to ride around with an eagle. Yeah. It was a bit of a scandal where he invented some dead soldiers, but ultimately what ended his political career was a disagreement about bimetallism with Grover Cleveland.
Well, so he rebounds from his disagreement over bimetallism with Grover Cleveland. So he basically runs like on how charismatic he is. Plus he owns a newspaper. He manages to use this to get the support of some people who later are like the foundational figures of Chicago machine politics, including corrupt alderman Johnny DePow Powers.
Hell yeah.
And some other ward clubs. More accusations of voter fraud here, but he wins the Democratic nomination. He runs against some like rich stockyard guy called Samuel Allerton, who's massively favored. He's only backed.
Hey, he doesn't have Johnny DePow though.
Yeah.
No, he does not. He is only backed by his own newspaper. whereas Allerton had the backing of like everybody in the city elite.
So he was the snobs. The snobs, and Harrison weirdly was the slobs.
The kind of eagle handling communist sympathizing slobs.
Like basically, yeah, voters thought that Harrison was charismatic and would be a better face for the Columbian Exposition because they wanted to like sell Chicago to the world as like an up and coming city. Allerton is a wet blanket who says he'd run Chicago like a business, and that he had the backing of like the business organizers organizing the World's Fair. Harrison wins in a landslide though, because everyone loves him.
Just perfect. Just like we need a huckster. We need a showman.
We need a guy. Yeah, we need the greatest showman. Mm. So meanwhile, just an aside here, a newspaper distributor, an avid Georgist.
Let's go ring the big Georgism bell. Ding, 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 ding.
In Chicago, who he also thought the railroad should be elevated. This guy, his name is Patrick Eugene Prendergast.
What happened to surnames? How do you lose the surname Prendergast?
Well, this guy later is executed, so maybe that's how. Okay. So he's writing Harrison letters saying that he supports Harrison on the condition that he will be appointed to a position in the new administration. Harrison does not know about these because he's just some guy writing him letters.
Oh my God. I see the dimensions this is going, because we did a Well, There's Your Problem episode about President Garfield. And
oh, yeah. Similar vibe.
Very similar vibe. Does America just generate Charles Guiteau, plural, with an X at the end of Guiteau?
Yeah, there's actually a big pit in Nebraska that they all crawl out of. And we're trying to cover it up, but it keeps growing.
Crawling out of the pit like appoint me ambassador to France.
I want to go to Europe as much as you do.
So more on Mr. Prendergast in a second.
You know, Stockholm was always the first stop.
Baby. So Harrison gets back into power and immediately says to himself, time to build the Chicago Democratic machine, because it is the 1890s and everybody else in every other city has already done it. So the first step, he appoints a guy named John Coughlin, also known as Bathhouse John or simply The Bath.
Onsen Johnny.
Onsen Johnny, because he got his start as a bathhouse masseuse and later owned a bunch of bathhouses.
Mm-hmm. Okay, sure.
They call him Johnny Blowjobs.
The Democrat respecting bathhouse.
Yeah. He gets Bathhouse John to sit on the reception committee for the World's Fair.
It's so funny that like at some point, like what you do to get ahead in machine politics switches to being involved in like a sort of an evangelical church that's also kind of a business success program.
Yeah, but
it used to be that you could just hang out in the bathhouse.
Well, see, the thing is, he had to jerk a lot of guys off in that bathhouse in order to get his foot in the door of machine politics. You know, boy, were his wrists tired.
Yeah, I was going to say, time was in America. This is like overseeing a big change in American politics, right? Because in the 1850s, you got to be jerking some guy off in a coffin inside of a tomb. Mm-hmm. And by the 1890s, you got to be jerking somebody off in a bathhouse. And I think that's very representative of where American politics went.
Very much so.
Yeah. So he gets this guy to sit on the reception committee for the World's Fair. He did this because the Bath, along with associates Hinky Dink Mike Kenna, and Johnny Powers, aka Johnny DePauw.
So he was very. So Mike Kenna was very easy for the Bath to handle then, because he only had.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So the three of those guys were known as the Gray Wolves of Chicago.
Don't
which
call
were
them
corrupt,
that. You can't call them that. The three were Turkish super nationalists of Chicago.
I guess this is like Transylvania University, though. They beat them.
He got radicalized into Turkish nationalism by running a bathhouse. It was more like a kind of a hammam than an onsen.
That's but these aldermen, you know, they came to power on the same time. They were basically the foundation of like the Democratic machine in Chicago in the early 1900s. They were known for a practice known as boodling, where businesses would bribe them for the franchises for public service contracts, which is also known as bribing. I don't know why they named it a second thing.
Yeah, it's bribing that's against the law. There's no law against boodling.
I think any time henceforth when we talk about, you know, money being stuffed into people's socks, that's boodling to us.
That's boodling. Okay, great. Official official stance. Boodling is good.
I don't think that's not an immortal precept.
No,
that's
it's aspirational. Yeah.
Yeah, this is a sort of, I think, a guideline for the podcast moving forward.
It's style guide.
Which is to bring up boodling as much as possible. Mm-hmm. Because it's a fun word to say. Say it with me, boodle.
Boodle.
Oh, me?
Yeah.
You want me to?
I would like you to say it.
You want me to say boodling?
That's right.
Matthew, okay. are you aware of Boodles, the gentleman's club in London?
I'm aware of Boodles from listening to Trash Future, which is a podcast that I've listened to before.
Can't say who's on it.
I will never say who's on mm-hmm. it. So Harrison is sworn in for his fifth term as mayor on April 17th, 1893. On May 5th, the Columbian Exposition opens, which is set to run until the end of October. And it goes really good.
Mm. Has a big, like, Greatest Showman type opening.
Yeah.
A lot of exertion, probably.
Yeah, everything's great. There's definitely some guy running around in a stuffing people into a murder house, but that's not his problem. Harrison gives a speech at the fair's American Cities Day on October 28th.
The International Day of Mayors.
Mm-hmm. The International Day of Mayors. This guy, Prendergast, the newspaper distributor who was writing him letters, he goes to Harrison's house at 10 to 8 that night.
Wow, rude. Mm-hmm. Like, late to just be showing up unprompted.
At the mayor's house, yeah. He rings the bell and a maid lets him in.
Just like, yeah, sure, whatever.
Yeah,
I'm on break. Do whatever you want.
Yeah. And then he goes into the parlor and Harrison's asleep on a sofa. And then he shoots him 3 times.
Whoa.
And he dies 30 minutes later.
Charles Gateaud.
Gateaud.
It used to be so much.
Dark Souls font. Gateaud.
Ambassadorship to France achieved. It used to be so much easier to assassinate people back when you could just go to their house, like knock on the door, someone would answer, and then you could shoot them. And it turns out all of the people that you might really want to shoot, you can't just like knock on their front door and then shoot them anymore.
Not anymore. Yeah, these of days, they don't let you. I brought this episode to us because I really wanted to I was just thinking about what it could look like if people were getting assassinated sometimes. So on October 31st, the Columbian Exposition is supposed to have its big closing ceremony.
Not enough drunk policemen either. Sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. We should make everyone in society drunk again. I think that would solve a lot of problems.
That is true. Yeah.
If you're listening to this driving,
mm-hmm.
let's go. So there's supposed to be a big closing ceremony on October 31st, or as they call it, in Transy University, Christmas. they replace the closing celebration with like a humongous funeral service for the guy.
Oh my God. Perfect. You elect him to like advertise for the thing and he advertises it ultimately with his death. Like he makes a blood sacrifice for the Columbian Exposition. Transy University's most famous son.
Those who walk away from the Columbian World's Exposition.
Look, it's blood in, blood out.
The blood of one mayor.
It only depends on the assassination of one man.
Yeah.
People don't know, but the boy in a mouse is actually wearing a sash because he's the mayor.
Yeah, he's the. Yeah, we should one day cover the mayor of O'Malley's. So, and then 4 years later, his son is elected mayor, and then his mayor 5 times.
On the sympathy ticket, you have to imagine.
On the sympathy, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then his mayor 5 very boring times, and all he does is, like, let a bunch of brothels open and then close them all.
You must be so disappointed as a Chicagoan under Carter Harrison IV. She's like, oh boy, here we go again.
To get assassinated by a Georgist as well is really funny because there's not a long history of like Georgist terrorism, right? It would be funny if there were, but there isn't. And so that is it. It's like a kind of radicalized Lib Dem, you know? It's like, irrespective of the policies, you don't expect that to be the guy who shoots somebody.
Yeah, I just didn't think he'd be a Georgist.
No. It's just like the last words you perceive on Earth as the guy shoots you are like flat tax. And you're like,
land value tax. What?
Have you read this book? Bang, bang, bang.
I don't know why Georgism has cropped up in 2 episodes I've done now, but maybe I'll try to keep it going.
Well, that is because Georgists. You talk about the mayors of the 19th century.
Mm. That's maybe why. No, the other one was the guy from Harrisburg. It was very much the mayor in the
1970s. Georgist
mayor.
All right. We'll get more Georgist mayors in on.
Cleveland had a Georgist mayor.
Oh, okay. Put it on the list. I mean, sorry, it's already on the list.
I'm reconfiguring where Mayor Tom L. Johnson of Cleveland is going to be in the Mentaculous.
More specifically, you're not reconfiguring the list. You are thinking the list is reconfiguring itself.
He's rotund.
That's right. He's rotund?
He is rotund, yes.
Okay. Cleveland's big Georgia's boy.
Mm. Anyways, so that's Carter Harrison III, and also 30 minutes about Transylvania University.
Yeah. So remember to like go and buy a Transy Lady Pioneers shirt.
Yeah. I think that's our main message for the episode, yeah. Is go buy some university merch from Transy University.
Yeah. If you have a sport, I guarantee you can get that sport printed on a shirt with Transy on it. And I'm excited to see a bunch of like Transy softball shirts. Whenever we do a first live show, it better look like a fucking pep rally in there.
This is also a free episode, and I urge you all citizens of the world to join our Patreon at nogodsnomares.com. For $5 a month, you can get the other half of the episodes we release. And also you can go to genderpodcast.com/live if you'd like to see me perform in Chicago or Minneapolis next weekend.
Pretty good.
At release.
Hey, maybe some. Oh, you know what day is that? Because this is coming out like not this week, right?
This is coming out on the 17th, and I will be in Chicago on the 24th and Minneapolis on the 25th.
I wonder if people in Minneapolis will have time to get their Transy baseball caps.
I hope so. I really hope so.
I hope if you are in the audience in Minneapolis and you throw me a hat, I will blow you a little kiss.
Fantastic. And as always, give us all your cookie feedback and suggestions. nogodsnomares.com.
Okay.
Thanks for listening.
Bye,
everybody. Bye.